and mother is literally a carrot, you know. Like, is she a carrot? I think she's a carrot, right? Like, you know, for people of my age, nature was a very important part of our childhoods, whether or not we were actually in it. And over the past year or so, I've discovered that being in nature actually makes me feel, you know, kind of not horrible all the time. So I went on a walk this morning to a local park with the effort to go bird watching. Obviously, I mean, if you listen to CJSF, you know, the people who make the programming here, we are worried about the birds. We are wild about the avians. We love Bird Note, first of all. A number of us at the station are also people who enjoy looking at birds in nature, in the wild, birding. And I suppose at some point, I decided that Bird Note was not enough. I have to try birding as well. So I started to last year, and I'm doing it extremely low level, super novice. My version of birding is looking outside of my window and trying to identify any of the birds that I see hopping around in the neighborhood. And that's it. Living in the suburbs, you see, like, basically, like, the same three or four types of birds most often. Crows, gulls, American robins, your occasional stellar jay. And that's really it. So I wanted to go to the park. Again, I have not been feeling great emotionally nor mentally recently, and I'm still not the most well, but I must read you the list of birds that I saw during this little stint in the park. When I say stint in the park, that makes it sound like I'm doing something shady. I was just hanging out in the park looking at birds, okay? All right. I have to share with you. This is so exciting to me because there were multiple birds that I do not commonly see in my neighborhood because I don't live near a park. While I was walking to the park, living in the suburbs, I like have to like go through like residential area. And so I consciously made the effort to not listen to a podcast or music, just listening to the bird songs and noticing what was around me. And that was so great. In the residential streets, on my way to the park, I saw many American robins. I saw stellar jays and golden-crowned sparrows, which are adorable. While at the park, which is also an interesting experience, it's one of those like common suburb parks, I guess, that are like humanly constructed, and there's like a small body of water in the middle of it. While there, though, I saw near the water tree sparrows, which I have never really noticed before. I don't frequent this park, but I also don't often see tree sparrows. Obviously, there were mallards in the little pond. There was a Canada goose that was really chill at one point, and then as I was watching its surroundings, it turned around and started to look directly at me. That was fun. But there were also black cap chickadees, adorable. And then an American coot. And I identified that one. I didn't have to look through my Merlin app. I knew. I had to confirm with my Merlin app, but I knew that was an American coot. And also a spotted tahi, which I had not also really paid much attention to in the past. But it is this gorgeous little bird, a little bit smaller than your average American crow. I think a little bit like fluffier appearing as well. Mostly like black body and head, a little bit of brown, some white spots, and then the eyes are, they're very gorgeous because they look like they are ready to fight. They look feral and honestly a little bit scary. I love a weird looking bird. The thing is, also, it was not exactly the day to not wear glasses on a walk. I must have mentioned it on the show at some point before, but I actually, my vision is not that, like, my prescription for my vision is not that severe. I can see okay without my glasses. I have one eye that is farsighted and one eye that is nearsighted by only a smidgen on both sides. It's mostly astigmatism that is the issue. But I can read okay. I can look at places far away okay as well. But things usually appear blurry to me, no matter what distance they're in, if I take off my glasses. And so because I didn't think that I had to, like, read anything or, like, look at anything super far away, I didn't wear them on my walk, which made it a little bit difficult to identify some of the birds while I was at the park. You know, don't take your 20/20 vision for granted. If you have 20/20 vision, don't take it for granted. It is a privilege that few have. Few have the luxury of having clear vision. Overall, oh, and what I mean by going into this little segment about the vision is that when I say that I am a very low level, like level one, not even level one, maybe like level zero birder, is that I don't use a pair of binoculars when I bird. If you are a regular birder and you hear me say this, you might be like, what is wrong with you, Leslie? Are you well? That's not how you do the birding. In my opinion, it's okay. It's fine. Because I'm mostly just here to appreciate basking in the presence of birds. I'm not out here trying to identify and go Ash Ketchum on these birds. You know, I'm not being the bird Pokemon master. I'm not trying to catch them all, right? I'm just listening to these cute little bird sounds and looking around me, thinking that life is great whenever I am able to identify in a bird which I commonly do not see, which is not often. Usually have to rely on the Merlin app. But I'm not trying to do anything fancy. I do think that before the summer months hit, I should probably make a concerted effort to invest in a pair of semi-good binoculars, though. It would make going to some of these, like, little nature excursions a little bit easier when I'm looking for birds. Because sometimes they do not come around you within the distance of the naked eye. Sometimes birds are up in the tall, tall trees and they refuse to come down. Or sometimes they're really far away on the other side of the marsh and you want to double check if that's a great blue heron, but the only tool you have is the zoom on your phone camera, and your phone is not that new. In those cases, having a pair of binoculars, I'm sure, yeah, wonderful, great, I'll try them. So I really have to, like, make that effort to do so. But I think trying to, like, bring out the, like, sort of critical, nuanced side of Typically Tuesdays into this conversation is why I have been enjoying being in nature for quite a little bit the past year or so. And I think it's because I have decided to myself that I am simply I'm not gonna go into nature with any other purpose other than to, like, connect with what is around me. I'm not going out there again, not adding to my Pokedex of birds or my Pokedex of, like, mushrooms and foraging materials and whatnot. I don't have to know anything is what I'm trying to say to you. If you are a naturist and you're listening to me talk, or if you're just, like, a person who, like, likes being outdoors and identifying things, you might be like, Leslie, what is wrong with you? Wow, really scrutinizing me throughout this entire episode. But here's the thing. I think at some point in my early childhood, maybe a little bit after, the concept of being in nature started to sound a little bit more colonial every time I heard somebody talk about it. The goal and need and purpose to go out into nature to challenge oneself, to conquer something either within oneself, like a skill or a fear or some material, actually some resource in nature, also subconsciously made me wary of going out there into the woods. And of course, that's not true of every person who's, like, a nature nerd. Obviously, that's not true. I think somehow some of the mainstream, discourse, but some of the mainstream, like, implicit ideas about, like, why one should go into nature alienated me from my desire to actually connect with the land. More on that later, I think, because I've been talking a lot. I think it's time for some music. We're going to go into it with some Also some new VanCon. Wow, we've got a lot of new VanCon this week. Again, so wonderful. We love her on this show. We love her at the station. This is Shade Awele off of her, also her debut EP. I know this is different. I know this is true. Your brown eyes are telling me just what to do. And I'm not gonna lie, I want you. Wanna make it a fit. Which is called Intuition. This is If All We Have. Let's get into it. Something deep is water, something sweet is home. Be my superpower, precious as a stone. Sunsets turn into sunrise, all the reasons why. You could be my once in a lifetime. But if all we have is tonight, give me all your fair and my love. I'll cherish all that like the light. Give me all your fair and my love. And if we make it to the morning, I'll do it all over again. Like all we had was tonight. One more night. It's bigger than passion. It's bigger than me. Something about the way you latch on makes me dream of what this could be. Of what this could be. It's never been easy, but just maybe we'll leave the past behind. Toxic energy. Maybe we'll be something deep as water, something sweet as all the sweetest. Be my superpower, precious as a stone. Sunset's turned into sunrise. In a lifetime. But if all we have is tonight, give me all your fair and my love. I'll cherish all love like the light. Give me all your fair and my love. And if we make it to the morning, I'll do it all over again. Like all we had was tonight. One more night.
Lay up, bro, lay up, bro, lay up. the sky covers half of the clouds above here, and the concrete is crumbling slowly, and the lovers will leap off the end of the pier and then sink into everything holy.
The avian world is full of mimicry artists. Stellar jays, blue-gray gnatcatchers, and European starlings can all imitate the calls of other species of birds. But northern mockingbirds have taken mimicry to a whole new level. Sure, they can mimic other birds, but their repertoire includes more than just bird standards. Mockingbirds can mimic frogs and toads. The mockingbird imitates the calls of not one or two, but 12 species of amphibians found in North America. The mimicry is so good, it's hard to tell frog from bird. Here's the call of a Cope's gray tree frog. Now compare it to the mockingbird's attempt at copying it. Tree frog. Mockingbird. So, how does this mimicry benefit the bird? That remains something of a mystery, but scientists think that the females might find it attractive. With such extensive knowledge of the great American songbird book, mockingbirds really are the crooners, or croakers, of the bird world. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Good old Bird Note for you there. That was Bird Note. You're tuned into Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. My name is Leslie. You just heard The Bug Club with Do It All Again. That was recommended to me by the host of your Thursday hour open mic at 1 o'clock, Sasha. She knows that I'm really into birds, and so she was like, you should listen to this album. It's called Rare Birds, and I really enjoyed it. Thank you, Sasha. Tune into her open mic, by the way, Thursdays at 1 o'clock. Got some great rock and punk music, and of course other stuff, but she really specializes in pulling some great punk stuff. Thursdays 1 o'clock with Sasha for your open mic hour. Before that, you heard Burning Brains by Tierra Whack off of her latest record, Worldwide Whack. Been really anticipating that one. Love Tierra Whack. Love songs about being mentally ill as well. Of course, here on Typically Tuesdays, that's what we do. Listen, I think one of the reasons why I've been so much more open to, like, getting into the nature and stuff like that, the past little bit is because, like, I'm not saying nature is not real. Like, nature is real. But as feminist scholar Donna Haraway suggests in her, in one of her most incredible work, A Cyborg Manifesto, what humans seem to observe and discover in science, in natural, like, hard sciences, is influenced by human culture. And those scientific discoveries, said to be objective and scientific and whatnot, end up influencing our culture and our society. It is this feedback loop, this dialectical between nature and culture, right? So long as human beings are the ones who are writing and making these discoveries, because we're using our human ontology, our human worldviews, to look at science and to look at scientific phenomena, including nature. What very much seems to be the total opposite of culture, which is supposed to be humanly constructed. But when it is human people who are talking about nature with their own human people brains, influenced by their own human people society, you know, there's a question of like, ontological fact there, I guess, or what even is fact. No, not what even is fact, obviously. Like, fact is a human construction as well. Okay, we're not going to get into it, but it's a really fascinating idea. And I think that has made me feel a little bit more comfortable in nature. This is coupled with, of course, the incredible work that a lot of Black and Indigenous naturists have been doing around decolonizing the outdoors, I guess, or like knowledge and activities in the outdoors, to help us rework the side of our brain that reminds us that to exist on lands and to exist in nature and to really to be as people, we have to acknowledge that we owe a great deal to the land and we owe a great deal to nature. We exist on it and therefore have a relationship with it, and we should not take that for granted. There's a lot of great work out there being done. I recently read this article that was shared by Robin, who is the host of Roots and Berries every Friday at 12 on 90.1 FM. It was written in the Narwhal, published earlier this year.